down that long, lonesome road, babe, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye is too good a word, babe, so I'll just say fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time, but don't think twice, it's all right.
Dan Beebe, break out your Dylan tapes. It's going to be a long couple of months for you, I think. Not that the last six haven't been long enough. Welcome to as always, a special edition of the Fastest 40 Minutes in Podcasting. With me, as always, is Ross. This is Bill, of course. But we also have another special guest that we wanted to bring in just for this special occasion. Special, special, special. Here's his intro music.
Here comes Greg, Greg, Greg. Here comes Greg, Greg, Greg. We like Greg, 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 Greg. His calves are shaped like a cantaloupe. His head is as big as a toilet bowl. He's not your typical average Joe. His name is Greg, 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 Greg,
Greg,
Greg,
Greg,
Greg,
Greg, Greg, Greg, Greg,
Greg. Hi, how are you doing, Greg?
I'm fantastic.
Or as you're known on Rockin' Nation, Good 36.
Yes, I am. And, I know that we're all gathered here today, for a special reason. All here to discuss the passing of Rue McClanahan. And I for one, want to send my deepest condolences to the McClanahan family. She was always the hottest golden girl.
I was crushed because I thought, they're already saying they're thinking about having Betty White on another next season in Saturday Night Live. I wanted to go a different direction. I wanted Miss McClanahan to have her shot. And
it's a shame that we hold, just because they're older doesn't mean that they can't be what's the word I'm looking for?
Funny.
That's exactly it. Yes. it's such a shame. But rest in peace, Rue McClanahan. And okay, so that's it for the tackle.
Yeah, I feel like we should, we're only 2 minutes in. I feel like we should talk about something else. I mean, whatever comes up, I don't know. Softball kind of sucked today.
Yeah, my beard's itchy, or if you call it a beard.
Yeah, my attempt at a beard is really starting to drive me crazy. I don't see how.
I really don't know how Kyle Orton does it with the neck beard. It's awful. With lots of Jack Daniels, I imagine.
Well, we can only assume.
Yeah, I mean, oh, hi, Ross, you're back.
I am back.
Good, well, we missed you.
Not so long.
We were discussing the passing of Rue McClanahan.
Ross, are you going to show respect?
What did Aaron Early think about it?
I don't know. I'm sure that he had some awesome quote about it, though.
I'm sure he would respond like he responded to about 8 other things today. It makes me want to throw up.
Yeah, like, that dude really doesn't give a bad quote, and that's where the genesis of all of this came from, is that he really is just a walking quote machine. That, you remember that show on MTV, True Life? Like, I want True Life, I'm the Missouri softball coach. I would watch that.
Advertisers would just go absolutely wild.
Wouldn't they? I mean, look, you could get, let's see, you get Rotel on it. You could get Barbasol.
You already have a network picked out.
Yeah, actually, I do. Thanks for asking that. I would definitely watch Aaron Early Wine, behind the music, behind the stubble.
Behind the music. Okay, well.
To the news of the day?
Yeah, I guess, we should get to that. To the panic on the plaza. As Dave Matters has so aptly put it, we're going along our normal day feeling sorry for ourselves for losing in softball when Chip Brown of Rivals.com, the Texas side Orange Bloods, why he was connected to this, I'm not completely sure, but he breaks the news that supposedly sources, quote-unquote, close to the situation, think the Pac-10 is going to invite the Big 12 South minus Baylor and plus Colorado to the Pac-16. The big story here is, if this is true, this is the greatest heel turn in the history of college football. because, you know, they shook the Big 12's hand. They said, yeah, we're in this with you guys. We'll figure out a station. Then they hit him in the back with a chair. And I'm really, just out of my morbid curiosity, I kind of want it to be true, even though there's a chance that it completely and totally screws Missouri over. Thoughts?
Ross, go right ahead, your blog.
All right. Well, I mean, as we're trying to warn, as much as everybody's delighting in the Shaden Freuda of the moment that the school to our west may not have a place, you know, we better be pretty damn sure that we've got an invite to the Big Ten before, you know, Missouri fans are ready to sleep rather lightly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this just because it'll get the ball rolling. And I'm, you know, we're 6 months in, and I'm so sick of the rumors and the sources close to the situation with no name. But it does become a little scary because then there is no backup plan. If Missouri doesn't get a Big Ten invite, we're in a conversation or in a conference with Memphis real quick.
You know, it's real funny. It's to quote Ron Burgundy, that really escalated quickly. you talk about where we really got lulled to sleep, where it seemed like there was a steady stream of news coming out, or at least not news. News is the wrong word. Rumor mongering. There was a steady stream of rumor mongering coming out about Big Ten and Big 12 and all this stuff. And hey, Missouri and Nebraska are going to leave, or maybe they're not. But then there's nothing substantial. And then it feels like for about a week and a half or maybe 2 weeks, things had kind of calmed down. Everything had kind of relaxed for a second. And then the internet exploded. And I, you know, ultimately, I think that as a college football fan, as a college sports fan, this makes me very happy because I think that the Pac-16 would be an incredible conference to watch. As a Missouri fan, I'm a little hesitant to get all jumpy up and down about it.
I mean, I do think if this is true, and this whole podcast is based around if, this could be completely outdated by tomorrow when BB announces that, you know, not only is the Big 12 staying together, but they're adding Cincinnati, Louisville, I don't know, Michigan and Michigan State, whatever.
Toledo.
And the University of Toronto. There you go.
Varsity Blues.
If this is true, then I don't even know what happens next. I mean, you have to like the Missouri's chances because if it becomes a race for television markets, then of course, Rutgers is still strangely first in line for Big Ten inclusion. But then Missouri's right there thanks to just geographic luck, pretty much. But I don't know. I mean, I'm still fascinated with the idea of the Big Ten adding Maryland because I love College Park and the University of Maryland, and I would love for it to happen. But, I mean, do you think that would make them get a little more daring in their own choices? Well, not that we know where their preferences are right now anyway, but, I mean, do you think they'd be more willing to take on some crazy pick like Maryland or Georgia Tech, or do you think we'd still be looking at basically the same pool of six or seven schools?
I'll say this, Darien. I don't think Darien's a wholly bad thing for Missouri because the other option is ultra conservative, and if they go to one team, I think a lot of people are pretty convinced Missouri might be screwed at that point. You know, back whenever all this started, and we were freaking out because the amount of teams they might pull in to add just one. But you know, as soon as they consider expanding to 14 or 16, Missouri seems pretty safely in. You know, knock on wood that you know we're not left screwed somehow.
I think that's a reasonable point. I mean, we assume that it's all going to, you know, the wonderful 4-16 team conferences one day. That first of all, that's a geographic impossibility. But it's still, I think we assume that if one conference, the Pac-10 goes to 16, then the SEC and the Big Ten will follow. And maybe it's right that they need to do that because of, you know, just markets, you know, just snatching up as many markets as possible. And because of the markets, I still think it's most likely that they would go to 14 or 16. But, yeah, I mean, it's who the hell knows what the Big Ten's actually thinking? Who the hell knows what the Pac-10 or anybody else is thinking?
Well, and now while we're on the topic of if, which apparently is the word of the day.
Yes.
But if, let's just say that this is true, and obviously we're all working on that assumption. My question is, why would Texas do this? I feel like Texas has obviously been is the golden goose in all of this. They're the big dog, and I feel like moving to the Pac-10. You know, why compete against USC and why compete against them? Why not become an independent? And here in Dallas, that's been the big talk around, at least around sports talk radio, has been why would Texas move to another conference when they could just remain an independent and really dominate the state? From both a recruiting aspect, from a media aspect. So I don't know if it's necessarily a given that Texas would jump to the Pac-16.
Well,
I think there's still a lot of moving parts, obviously.
Well, you bring up a good point, although I will also say that they already do own media and recruiting in Texas. But, but I mean, you do bring up a good point. Nobody has to accept this. You know, it's not like it's a hostile takeover where the Pac-10 says, we're taking these six and you know, moving along. Extending the invite is one thing, but I guess the other question to be asked is, do these teams accept? And sub-question, if Texas says no, are the other five still invited?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the other issue is because if you're the Pac-10, obviously you're wanting to get Texas. And do you really want to – how much is it worth to take on A&M, Tech, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Colorado with all due respect to those fine institutions? Is that really enough to warrant a giant expansion just to add, you know, basically Oklahoma?
You know, and then the other question that has to be asked is, you know, as Chip Brown noted, Texas A&M is looking on the complete opposite side of the country right now.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you're talking about once every, I mean, presumably, you're talking once every 2 years, Texas A&M traveling to Washington to play a conference game. And that just seems a little silly, and obviously Iowa State travels to Austin and all that stuff, but that geographically, it is very odd and very kind of, I don't know, pre-manifest destiny.
I'm just looking forward to the awkward situation where Texas Tech accepts in a millisecond, Texas declines, and then the Pac-10 goes, sorry, Tech, just
Buddy,
kidding.
Listen, we were only inviting you because of the hot girl that you were bringing to the party.
Correct.
So actually, you're not invited anymore.
How much fun is that going to be when Mike Leach ends up at UCLA in a couple of years?
Oh my! I would pay for pay-per-view to watch that game, because at the end of the game, you know that he would do something wacky at midfield, like, I don't know, take a sword and stab it in the middle of the field, or I don't know, do a weather broadcast, something very Mike Leach-ish,
or try to score 100 points.
Oh man. Especially if Tech down that year, like, he would run up the score like it's nobody's business. Uh-huh.
So I guess not that we have a topic to be on topic with, really, but the three main scenarios I guess you can see playing out are, you know, Texas saying yes and the other five immediately saying yes. Texas saying no, the other four in the Big 12 South kind of saying, yeah, we'll stay over here with everybody else, and Colorado saying, you know what, actually, guys, I'm going to check this out, and leaving anyway. They might have an invite even if Texas doesn't say yes. And then, I don't know, is there a third scenario somewhere in between? Like, Texas, like, I don't know. Well, like you said, A&M going east and the others going west, and then they add, I don't know, Utah, or, well, okay, not Baylor, but Utah or somebody like that. And the fourth scenario, am I speculating too much since we still don't know if this is true?
Go ahead, Rob.
All right, well, first of all, we should update that apparently Pac-10 Commissioner Larry Scott has played down the report.
Right.
But beyond that, I think one of the things I don't want to say it's possible or anything, but at least, you know, what if the Mountain West comes out with their big shiny new toy in Boise State and then the Pac-10 is turned down by a couple of these institutions, and then ends up having to raid, you know, the Utah and whoever they want to grab from there. And Mountain West is basically left with nothing after probably the biggest coup they've had since their inception.
Yeah, they can't really be very happy right now, because they really were the only concrete news emerging from this week is that they were about to become a semi-legitimate major conference. And then the script got completely flipped on them.
Well, and if you're going to talk about a possible third scenario to all of these, you'd have to look at who the most, I mean, the word is harsh, but who the most desperate of this group is. And that would have to be Oklahoma, right? I mean, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, for the most part, are, I mean, you may be arguing that Texas, Texas A&M, and Texas Tech are maybe less so Tech, but at least A&M and Texas are kind of a package deal, or they like to be. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, they don't boast any major media markets. You know, outside of, I mean, they're not, you know, again, with all due respect, because hey, I went to Missouri, and God knows they've been knocked on enough academically, but they're not exactly shining beacons of academia. This is a strange situation where you could see maybe, what if Texas pulls out and says, no, we're not going to do it, Texas A&M and Tech follow suit, Colorado says, I'm going to go join the Mountain West party, see you guys later, and then Oklahoma and Oklahoma State make the desperation jump to the Pac-10. That's something that then all of a sudden you have the Pac-12, and you have two kind of awkward, you know, seven fingers out here on each hand.
Jeez, did you just eat the microphone?
Yeah, dude, I did. You. By the way, to have me in this podcast, you definitely kept me from watching more of The Wire. So if at any point I kind of freak out, it's because I'm just really worried about Kima.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and I hope your doors are locked.
They are. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
So, I guess the other piece, and we kind of mentioned it with A&M, is the SEC swears that, you know, despite my choose-your-own-adventure last week, they are not looking to be proactive. They will only react, which, first of all, seems weird for the SEC. I think when their own meetings finish, they're going to have a few different plans in the works. And if the Pac-10 really does invite Texas, they might move on, you know, trying to show a little leg of their own towards Texas. Do we expect anything to come out of that? You know, assuming even if it just stays as rumors with the Pac-10 meetings, what, this weekend, I guess, do we expect any more aggressive action out of the SEC?
I don't expect aggression per se. I think, like you said, there'll be contingency plans that they come up with, and you know they're going to be asked about it, so there's going to be some kind of smoke that everyone will absolutely freak out about. But, I mean, have you got the impression at all from any of the SEC brass that there's any inkling that they're going to make the first move here? Because I sure as hell haven't.
Well, and that's just weird to me. Like, they are, well, they're Southerners, and they are the source of power of college football. I just personally wonder, despite the fact that we haven't actually heard anything about it, you know, do they have some plan of action where maybe they do take the first step if the other conferences drag their heels a little bit?
You know, I'm not sure why the SEC would necessarily be proactive, because they're pretty much the biggest kid on the block. You know, maybe aside from the Big Ten with their TV deal, but now the SEC has the ESPN package. You know, I don't know why they need to be proactive. They've got a rabid fan base that loves things the way that they are. I mean, obviously, if you get Texas, as we said, ad nauseum, they that's the big prize. But I don't know why they necessarily need to be proactive.
Well, I think, I mean, the threat of Texas and OU being in the same conference as USC and Oregon, and there being four reasonably legitimate top 10 programs in that conference, you know, in a totally calm, still situation, they are the top dog and they don't need to do anything. But if their spot at the top is even being semi-threatened, not like the ACC sort of threatened it with, with Florida State and Miami a couple years ago, but a reasonably legitimate grab in terms of both market and football power, you know, would that not spur them to maybe try to jump in immediately so that they can stay by far number one?
Well, now that's very true, and that's an excellent point.
Thank you.
At that point, yeah, thank you, Bill. Way to go. At that point, wouldn't you make a play if you're the SEC? Obviously, then you make a play for Texas and Oklahoma, and you try to expand however you can. But there are big ACC dogs to be had. I think. I think Georgia Tech. I think Miami, which is on the rise at least in football. There's always Virginia Tech out there. There's still some plays for them to be made. I think, like Ross said, there's definitely contingency plans in place, but I'm not necessarily sure that they're super worried about that, because I think that they, kind of like the Big Ten, can have anybody they want.
Ross?
Well, I'll just say this. I don't expect the SEC commissioner, what the hell's the pronunciation of that? Is it Slide?
I've always said Slide, yeah.
Okay, just making sure. I don't expect him to be canceling any press conferences anytime soon, unlike our esteemed commissioner.
And by the way, a note to Mr. Beebe, Dave Littlefield, the former Pirates GM, found another job afterwards. No matter how he was the most brutal GM in the history of the world. Yes, he was the most brutal GM in the history of the world. He found another job, so you're okay, Mr. Beebe. I promise you, you will find... Even if it's just a scout for the Cubs like Littlefield, you know, you'll find work.
Oh, my gosh. By the way, is canceling a press conference the biggest sign of total chaos?
Incompetence?
Oh, my gosh. What a horrible PR move. That's like walking up onto the stage while the theater's on fire and be like, hey, guys, let me let you know, everything's okay. If you don't mind, I'm going to run out to my car, which is still running.
See Honestly, ya. That might be a better bet than actually canceling the press conference.
My goodness, what a horrible... If you're trying to run interference, you have failed in every sense of the term.
Well, it's just, it was throwing a fit. I mean, like, this isn't some organized press conference. This is whatever matter said. 30 or 40 press guys asking you questions. They're all asking the same questions. You can give answers like, well, we hope the conference stays together. We're looking into it. We feel confident that if the Pac-10 offers, we have enough juice to keep all of our programs. Not saying, you know what, screw this. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. That's kind of the worst move.
Can we claim a little bit of credit for Joe Castiglione's savvy? Because he's been the one, it seems like he's the smartest guy in the room at the meetings, or at least he has been to the press, where he's come out and said all the right things. Well, and, I mean, he's got Missouri tie. Can we claim him?
Well, he also hired Jeff Cable.
Oh.
That was like the first giant chink in his armor. Otherwise, he's, you know, Joey Cash is a brilliant guy.
I'm still gonna claim that in the Missouri column, and you can't stop me.
Well, he was making special claims to having been an AD on both sides of the north-south divide. No,
oh, yeah.
That's a rare distinction.
I think he's
the
one
only distinction.
Well, there you go. Like I said, we need to start claiming scoreboard on people whenever people, you know. People start ripping on Mike Alden, and be like, yeah, well, we've also got Joe Castiglione, and then drop the mic and walk away.
All right, I'll say this. Joe C. has been, I think, very solid at the meetings, but the thing about it is he almost had to be, because before the all this Pac-10 stuff came out, there was no question that his best bet was doing everything he could to keep the conference together.
Oh, yeah.
Which really, I mean, it's not... I don't understand how he managed to toe the line, and supposedly the smartest guy in the room and the smartest guy in the conference was unable to figure out how to take a hard-line stance without alienating people.
Dude, in Dan Beebe's defense, he just found out about theladders.com, and he was going at his profile, like, nonstop, trying to find some sweet AD jobs out there.
Who was paying him over $100K?
That's a great... Yeah... Actually, well, Bud Selig, if we're going to start talking about, you know, incompetent commissioners, they could just all form one giant incompetent commissioners union.
It's like the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, it's like the Legion of Doom. That's exactly what we need. A Legion of Doom of Commissioners.
I expect you to Microsoft Paint that.
Well, what would the Legion of Doom of Commissioners do exactly?
Bad things.
Destroy the Big 12, run baseball poorly, so on and so forth.
So nothing new, just they would bring their own skill set and just keep doing what they're doing.
It's basically the CIC of conference commissioners, basically. They're just sharing resources.
Negotiate bad TV contracts. You know, all these things that need to be done in the world, but, you know, nobody's really that dumb to do it.
Lock out the 2005 season.
And until the last month or so, I was trying my hardest not to rip on BB like everybody else did. And you'll realize I continue to not say his first name because I'm still not convinced it's Dan. And it might actually be Don. I'm saying it wrong every time. But I was trying to defend him a little bit because the job of Big 12 commissioner is powerless because you can't alienate Texas. Whatever you do, you can't alienate Texas. And, you know, not even a good commissioner, as my dog chews on the rug at my feet here. But, yeah, there is no, like, Jim Delaney would be in an awkward situation being the commissioner of the Big 12 because, you know, Texas has the most chips and they know it, and they can threaten to leave anytime they want to. They had that bad call at the end of the or when they didn't make the Big 12 championship game in 08, and their fans started circulating rumors that they were going to the ACC. I mean, it's just a really awkward situation to be in. But in the last month to 6 weeks, he has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he belongs in the Commissioner Legion of Doom.
The question I haven't seen asked almost anywhere, and I'm waiting for somebody to bring it up and maybe shed some light on it, is why has Kevin Weiberg gotten off scot-free? I mean, as the former Big 12 commissioner, I mean, did Dan Beebe walk into a house with the foundation falling apart and all the sinks rusted?
Well, he left for the Big 10 not to be commissioner. He left being the Big 10 first when the Big 10 network started. And I mean, that was the first sign that something was going wrong, is he went from being commissioner of the Big 12 voluntarily to being something below commissioner of the Big 10 and then out to the Pac-10. He knew, you know, that BB wasn't I don't remember if we've negotiated a TV contract since BB got here, but I mean, he knew either he had screwed up or just the climate was screwed up, and either way, the Big 12 was probably screwed.
Well, and Bill, earlier you said that it is a tough situation for BB because, you know, you have to be tech happy. And the analogy that I was going to make was that it's like being the CEO of a company where your wife works for the company too. And you just, like, you got to run the company the best way you can, but at the same time, your life's going to go to hell if you, you know, make your wife angry. So you're trying to balance these two things. So I understand that's a tough job, but I feel like Dan Beebe has gone out of his way to be aggressively bad at his job, and not talking to reporters who are, I think, have done a relatively, or some of them at least, I'm really talking about Dave Matter, some of them have done a good job of holding their stance and not being drawn off sides for all this speculation. They kind of want to help you get the word out there, and to just, you know, pout and storm off into an elevator is not the way to go if you're trying to, you know, allay the fears of, you know, Lou Perkins, who, wow, is his world just awful right now?
For $4 million a year, you can do that to my world all you want.
Yeah, you can do that for $40,000 a year.
I'll say this, Director of Communications Rob Carolla is probably not sleeping well tonight on Dan Beebe's behalf.
Oh my gosh! Do you think he's got caught in Beebe's like in his apartment at this point, like trying to talk him down every morning? Be like, all right, Dan.
Why would he want to talk him down?
Yeah. He'll be like, come on, man, jump. It'll be worth it.
It's over, man. It's over.
But sign this piece of paper that says I'm in charge when you leave.
Or sign this piece of paper that I can have a job with the Big Ten.
Yeah, Director of Communications for the Big Ten.
That's
network.
Right.
Hey.
So, do we have anything else to, you know, we've only gone 30 minutes, and typically we way over analyze things on podcasts, but before we move on to whatever the hell our next topic is, either Tony Mitchell or softball, do we have any other final words, any final parting shots at Mr. Beebe?
Forget the parting shots. I'm just hoping to hear from Jim Delaney sometime soon.
Well, I am actually a little worried that this is still not going to impact his timetable at all. And we're going to...
Yeah. I wonder if we can go back to, like, you know, the Big Two or something like that. It'll be like us in Nebraska for a while. Just hanging out together. You know, BFFs for a while. You know, schedule the same people and have our own conference championship. That'll be fun for a couple of years before until the Big Ten's ready, right?
Let's just play a best of 13 series with Nebraska for the right to go to a bowl game.
Well, now that Sue's gone, we might actually be able to keep our quarterback healthy. I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jared Crick, I hear,
the best player in college football.
Oh, you know it. Just like Marlon Lucky was last or the year before.
I don't think Greg's seen that article.
Yeah, no, Sporting News has said that Jared Crick, who was the second best defensive tackle on his team last year, is the best player in college football this year. So there's that.
Right.
I mean, look, somewhere Kendall Lawrence is laughing. I mean, come on. We all know who the best player in college football is, right?
Well, I mean, we already have to change his nickname from four Heismans to three, so... He's really got to step it up here.
My goodness. You know, and obviously we'll talk about football when the time comes, but...
Next week?
Yep.
Yeah, next week. But the Nebraska love, like, I understand it partially, and then the other part of me is like, all right, let's pump the brakes. It reminds me a lot of Oklahoma State last year.
Well, right. It's every year now. It's the same thing. 2 years ago, it was Tech and Clemson, and Tech actually lived up to the hype they had. But then, you know, we had Ole Miss and Oklahoma State last year. And, I mean, that's three out of four of the last 2 years who have, you know, it become, not that I care about being fair to Nebraska, but like I said in some comments thread a while back, this becomes unfair because now if they go 11-3 and win the Big 12 North again, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
And, that would be a steady improvement for that program. And now suddenly, they finished, what, 14th, 15th, 16th in the AP last year, and now they lose a player so transcendent and defensive tackle that he managed to finish in the top three of the Heisman, and they're supposed to get 10 spots better. And, I mean, it's not that I care that it's setting Nebraska up for disappointment or anything. It's, I'll enjoy it if it happens, but, I mean, it's just the circular wisdom that follows throughout the offseason is predictable and entertaining when it doesn't involve Nebraska.
Let's save some of this football talk for another time because I've got far too many thoughts on why Nebraska is probably going to go 8-4, but we'll
I think they're going 10-2, but that's still not 12-0.
Exactly, and Big Red Nation will call for folk lean 10.
Yeah. All right, so... Real quickly, since I have two Texas kids on the line here, we should talk about Tony Mitchell real quick. If you had to bet $1 million of Dan Beebe's money on whether Tony Mitchell is in a Missouri uniform next year or not, what do you say? As Tepper continues to headbutt his microphone.
I'm not headbutting my microphone. Yeah. I'm gonna go. If I had to bet, I'd say yeah, he's in a uniform. Only because anybody who's familiar with Dallas ISD knows that it is crooked as the day is long. Unfortunately, they've had a lot of problems in the past that many of them have just kind of been dealt with as quietly as possible. I think this is going to be one of those situations where this is going to get dealt with quietly as possible so as not to cause a huge commotion around Dallas ISD, because they don't need it. They don't need another athletic scandal along the same lines as what was his name? Darius something?
Darrell Arthur.
Yeah, they don't need that. I mean, they've had to take away state championships and stuff like that. They don't need that. They want this to go away as much as anybody. So that Dallas ISD investigation, I think, will be shorter than you think.
Ross?
I'm not as concerned as everybody else seems to be, but if I'm a betting man, and I'm certainly not betting on Tony Mitchell. Don't look at me, NCAA. I bet no, and the only reason I say that is I want to reserve judgment not only for the investigation, but more than anything, I'm ready to see a qualifying score on one of his standardized tests before I make that judgment.
That's by far my biggest concern. You know, he sent these veiled text messages to Gabe and I think Pete at Power Mizzou just about, yeah, I'm good. I'll be up there in June. It's cool. I got the score I needed. And there's never really, and, you know, Sheldon Richardson said the same thing to Gabe after he signed a couple years ago in football, or a year and a half ago. And there's just no guarantee that he's gotten the score he needs until he shows up. And that article, assuming the article that came out a couple days ago is right, that he still hasn't gotten the passing score he needs, he only has like one more chance to take the damn test, because somehow the ACT hasn't moved into the 21st century where you don't have to wait, you know, whatever it is, 3.5 years for your test score. He's running out of opportunities for that. Like in 2.5 months, I'm pretty sure this graduation thing, unless it's really, really bad, you know, if it just requires him to take a new set of tests to show that he's not a freshman in high school anymore, then I'm pretty sure 2.5 months is plenty of time to do that. But then he also has to pass the ACT, and he said, which he apparently has not done, and that's a gigantic concern. So
now that would be something that I would be concerned about. I don't know. I would still bet that he's in a Missouri uniform next year. Although I guess I would say that it wouldn't surprise me if I lost $9 million in Dan Beebe's money. I'm sad about it.
Well, and I'm glad that, you know, a month ago or a month and a half ago when we were doing our season end basketball pieces, I did my little projections thing and had Ratliff and Pressey doing pretty well. And I mentioned in one of those that Mitchell is a complete and total wild card. Like, we'd be good if we got nothing more than Wally Judge out of him. But if he wanted to be Carmelo Anthony, then, you know, we're the best team in the country. So, you know, being that he was only a wild card, it doesn't necessarily concern me. I'm not going to think too much less of next year's team if he doesn't play. But I'd sure as hell like to take the chance with him on the roster, especially since all this is coming out, like our boy Jihad said today. Since it's coming out now, if he ends up in a uniform, you know everything's all right, and we won't have to vacate wins later because of him.
Now, by the way, does your computer hate you yet because of all the changes you've had to make to your projections since you first put them out?
I hate me. I'm mad that I got involved in that, because Iowa State, every time I make these are my final projection statement, Iowa State loses another damn player. Although they're still not projected to win -1 games again like OU was for a while. That was awesome.
That would be very impressive if they could manage to lose one more game than they play.
The other morning on Rockin' Comments, we had -1 comments for a while there too. So anything's possible, as Kevin Garnett would say.
Rockin' Nation routinely breaking the matrix.
That's right.
I hate to rerail this rant that's going quite well right now, but no, one thing that's driving me nuts is the amount that, obviously, other fans from other fan bases have done this, but even a couple of Missouri fans as well, is somehow implicating Alden and especially Anderson as if they had something to do with trying to get Mitchell eligible at Pinkston, as if that has anything to do with how they're going to recruit him. Yeah. Any issues he had with Pinkston is Pinkston's deal of trying to make sure he's able to play for them. It has no bearing on his college eligibility, at least as far as the motivation is concerned.
Well, despite every reason to appreciate him, there is a good section of Missouri fans that still absolutely positively loathe Mike Alden, and always will. So he will come up in these things just because he is a scapegoat for everything. But yeah, I mean, Missouri was working behind the scenes to get him qualified before he even committed to Missouri.
Was this even before he committed to K-State?
Well, I think the test, the so-called, whatever, 5 tests in 2 hours or whatever, that piece happened in November. But, I mean, the dude had already been going to school for, like, 3 months. So, clearly, the getting him eligible, that whole thing was probably, like, a 6-month process. So, I don't know where K-State fell into it. But, I mean, clearly, this was going on very much independent of Missouri. And obviously, we were going to recruit him no matter what. But, I mean, yeah, yeah, it's... we're clearly not implicated in anything here. It's
I
just
think that's
like
implicating Mizzou in any sort of wrongdoing here is really putting blame on the wrong people. I mean, ultimately, this comes down to Pinkston. This comes down to, in a way, Dallas ISD, although they're really just more of a victim of circumstance just because Pinkston happens to be in Dallas ISD. But, you know, it all comes down to them. And, I mean, it's not like Mike Anderson went up and said, well, here's this crooked player. I'm going to go push him through these tests and get him there. No, I mean, that's not really how it works. And Mike Anderson has really shown no interest in players that, you know, can't qualify, essentially.
The CU athletic director, by the way, according to our friend, okay, not our friend, but Doc Saturday, passing along on Twitter that now he is backing off of his outlandish Pac-10 Big 12 expansion statement. So nobody knows what to think. And here's where I verify that I really like having Mike Alden as my athletic director, because he's probably in his hotel room right now staying the hell out of all of this. But anywho.
And having a steak dinner with Jim Delaney.
That's right.
Dipping Courvoisier.
And also, if we're putting blame on people regarding the Tony Mitchell situation, the whatever school district he was in Florida, run spell check on your damn website before bragging about your academics, please.
Its accreditation is through a homeschool association, Bill.
Yes. Yes.
you all know homeschool associations have a stellar record of, you know, being just the most stand-up type people, too.
Tebow?
Yeah. Tebow,
yeah, there you go.
Tebow.
All right. Well, we're past the 40-minute mark, and I do want to give a little bit of time on this podcast to the team, the Missouri team that dominated our attention span for a while this afternoon before all this crap went down, and that would be the Mizzou softball team, who, by my calculations, in at least the last 21 innings, has scored more than one run in an inning once, and really put Kristen Nottleman in a bad situation today, to the point where she had to feel bad because she held a team that averaged almost 8 runs a game to 3, and we lost. Ross, I assume you were working and didn't get to watch any of the game?
I saw none of it.
Okay. What about you? Tepper, you were in on some of that, weren't you?
I saw none of it, but followed it on Twitter as much as I could.
Well, I'll give the little 2-minute walkthrough here. Bottom of the first inning, Missouri blew what ended up being their, by far, their best opportunity to put some runs on the board. And really, at that point, it seemed very encouraging because of the way the Oregon game had ended, with Missouri erupting for 4 runs in the 6th. It looked like the offense was coming back in line. Nottleman was, of course, continuing to dominate. But in the bottom of the first, Jenna Marston singles, Nicole Hudson singles, or walks, and then who was it? Ashley Fleming walks, and the bases are loaded with one out, and Kat Lee and Catherine Poet, both of whom did really next to nothing today, both struck out, and Missouri was scoreless. Hawaii hits a solo shot to go up 1-0. Missouri comes back to make it 1-1. Rhea Taylor, who did absolutely nothing last weekend, came through with both runs scored today, but they just couldn't sustain anything. They got 6 hits and 3 walks in 7 innings, only played at 2 runs, and in the top half of the 7th, the law of averages caught up to Nottleman, and they hit the 2-run home run. The number 9 hitter hit the 2-run home run that ended up winning the game. It sounded like afterwards, our boy Stubble at Earlywine, like I said, at least once said, it makes me want to throw up, because you know, he was really, really right about a week and a half ago when he said, at this point, it doesn't matter what you've accomplished. It just matters who's hot right now. And the Missouri offense is very, very much not hot right now.
Well, and I think that just speaks to, I mean, just the nature of the game and what an unforgiving sport it is. That Kristen Nottleman, who has been lights out in the postseason, and at that post you put together about how great she's been in the month of May, and now, you know, obviously month of May and in June, she's been light freaking out. And really, it sounds like she makes two mistakes all day, essentially.
And really, those were both decent pitches. Like, they, I mean, clearly they could have been a little better, but they certainly weren't bad.
Obviously, I didn't see them, but, you know, it's, if she makes two less than perfect pitches and you lose, I mean, that's something that I think just speaks to the unforgiving nature of the game, and also speaks to really just how good she's been lately. And, I mean, obviously now it's an uphill battle because they get, what, they get Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, that's obviously going to be an uphill battle, and you would have liked to get this game against, you know, you know, what you seed-wise is the worst team in of the eight. But at the same time, you know, this isn't the end of the world. I trust in the tremendous stubble, and I think that all Missouri fans should as well.
I just really, I wanted to make sure that, I wanted Missouri to win a game this time around. That was pretty much, you know, to be able to say you not only got back to the World Series, but you improved upon last year's performance without Chelsea Thomas. I thought that was going to be really cool. I didn't have any grand visions of making the finals or anything, but heading into today, if they were to win, if they were to beat Hawaii, then they would have only had to win either two out of three or three out of four games at that point to make the finals. Suddenly it became a realistic goal. Now to make the finals, they got to win four in a row, at least three of which would be against teams that are ranked better than Hawaii. And so that's rough.
It's gonna be tough, and I mean Florida, what, they're ranked in the top 10 of the nation, are they not?
Yeah, they're a top 5 seed.
They're a top 5 seed, and you know, you're playing one of the lone unranked teams in the tournament. That's unfortunately a game you've got to win, and now our girls face an uphill battle. But if they can get the bats going, you know, if they can just get the bats going, then this is a whole new tournament. You know, although it's nice to see Rhea Taylor show some power. I didn't realize she had that kind of power.
Oh yeah, she was. I guess in her time here, she's been a right-handed power hitter and a left-handed slap hitter. So she's pretty much the best on the team at everything except pitching. But, I mean, we do have, you know, Florida got just absolutely whomped today. What was it, like 16-3 or something like that? They just got lit up by UCLA. And, you know, hopefully, you know, clearly their ace didn't have it today. And hopefully if she's off again, or if they have to go with their number two or number three on Saturday, then that opens a little bit of a door. But, yeah, I mean, we've got all these hitters who have made clutch hit after clutch hit after clutch hit this year. You know, clutch is great, but you don't have to make as many clutch plays if you just hit. If you hit the first five innings, you don't have to worry about coming through in the sixth and the seventh. And we pretty much, other than Rhea Taylor, she went 2-for-4. The rest of the team went 4-for-23. And you know, we just, you know, we need a little more offense if we're going to steal a game here. And we'll see. I mean, either way, it's been mighty successful. It's been a whole lot of fun. Last weekend was phenomenal. And it's something to build on, but now that you're here, you want to keep playing. All right. Well, we're at 48 minutes. And
if you're still listening, by the way, Rockin' Nation listener, thanks.
As our boy Boom said at when I told him, you know, he jumped in our last podcast in the last 5 minutes or so. I told him we were at the whatever 45-50 minute mark, and he said, "Are you serious?"
It does feel like it's flown by. What can I say? It's been so much fun.
Yeah. Well,
we're talking about rumors that in the midst, during the duration of this podcast, rumors that we held a podcast about have been shot down.
Yeah, and they were going to be shot down even if they were true. But, I mean, clearly we're having fun here, and chances are this is a bunch of smoke like everything else has been.
We're having fun here, no?
We are having fun here now.
That's right. And it's, once again, we are into June, and we have hardly had any sort of lull in content for Rockin' Nation this year. Just phenomenal from that sense. So thank you, Expansion and Realignment, for that. But eventually I want this stuff to actually be real so we can stop making assumptions and we can actually watch the carnage that takes place. So.
And sweet, sweet carnage it will be, as long as Missouri's on the right side of it.
Otherwise, yeah.
We're having fun here, no?
We We are having fun here. Thank you, Lee Corso.
All right, well, Ross sent me some outro music. Pretty sure this is Real Big Fish's first appearance on the podcast. I'd say you can veto, but it's already done.
And it's not sell out, which actually would probably work too.
So, for any of the nerds that don't like Real Big Fish, just realize we started this with Dylan, and so they can cancel each other out.
Nobody listens at this point anyway.
That's right. Yeah, duh. Never mind.
You know what? I hate every Rockin' Nation reader. Let's just see how many people listen to that. And if you did, call me out on it. In the comments. Let's just see how many people. Let's see. Let's guess who it's going to be.
Jihad.
Who else? I think that's it. What you should do is you should put like a password for like a free t-shirt at the store at the end of these podcasts, so that then anybody who actually listens to it can get a free t-shirt. Like, but only good towards a t-shirt that says, I listened to the entire Rockin' Nation podcast.
And all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
It's like eating the 72-ounce steak in one sitting.
That's right. Your stomach hurts just as much either way. All right. Well,
I don't hate every Rockin' Nation reader, for what it's worth.
Whatever. You can't backtrack on it already like you're the Colorado Athletic Director. Okay, well, I'm going to call Mercy Rule here and put on some Real Big Fish, and we'll talk next time there's a really fun rumor.
Tomorrow.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, tomorrow. All right. Bye, guys.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Well, they're standing at the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. More people gonna rise up.